Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 147. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me, as usual, is Ken Phillips. What's up?
Hey, well, we are in the process of getting some kitchen renovations done here. So that is what's up at our household. We're recording here in the basement tonight.
To be fair, though, we've only recorded one episode in the kitchen.
That is true.
At least to my recollection, it was one.
There was definitely one, yeah. I wouldn't bet that there was two.
Fair enough.
In general, that is what's going on, I guess, in the house here these days.
Yeah, it's looking pretty nice. You know, I do always... That was one thing about the condo, after living there for that many years and doing all those upgrades and then going, yup, I'm out of here, was a little bit crazy at least. Like, I didn't have any hesitation getting out of there, but there was still a part of me that was bummed that didn't get to really enjoy all the improvements after living in it for 15 years, you know, and just going, oh, yeah. I get to live in these improvements for, you know, various amounts of time, no more than 6 months. It kind of sucked. So I'm glad you're sticking around to get to enjoy enjoy what you guys are doing, because it does look very nice. What you guys have going on?
Yeah, it's a very bright green color we're going with, and I kind of was interested in that idea of a color. Just to brighten things up a little bit, you know, it gets a little dreary around here, Kevin, especially in the, winter months. So.
In the mid days of Navi Doggy.
Yeah. The dog days of Navi Doggy, if you will.
It's starting to get that time of the year where things are a little bit bleak for a while.
Yeah, we had, of course, had a strange cold snap here with some unexpected mid-November snow.
The snow wasn't so much the bad part, and the cold was.
Yeah, it was really cold.
And it forced me to do something that up to this point I had not done in my concert-going life, Ken.
Oh, wait, you went to a concert?
Yes, I did. I wholly debated just making this an episode, a solo episode, but I'm just bringing it to a full OPA episode, and maybe we'll get mentioned in subsequent episodes, too.
You heard it here first, people.
But it was 18 degrees, I believe. Maybe it was 16 when I went in. When I came out of the concert, and it was like maybe 24 degrees when I went in, and I ended up having to wait outside for half of an hour and miss the opening band. Trying to get in. And I was so glad that I decided to wear my jacket. Because, like, it's always one of those things, and it ended up happening. As soon as you're inside of a concert venue, it's hot as balls in there.
Yes.
Because there's so many people packed into small space. And while this was not a small space, since it was Nationwide Arena, there were still a lot of people packed in there.
So the conundrum is, do you bring your coat because it's going to be cold outside, but then when you're inside, it's going to be roasting hot. And you're not going to want your coat.
Yeah, I will say that roughly 80% of the crowd, maybe 85% of the crowd, decided to go the coat route. Like, I'm not sure that I've seen that many people with coats on inside of a venue prior to this. Like, because if it was, like, a normal November temperature, like, you know, 40s or something like that, you better bet your sweet ass I was going in there without a coat. you know, 40 is not all that bad. Six, when it comes out and it's 16, when you come out of a concert and it's 16, that just changes things.
Yeah, that gets your attention.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the worst thing, because I guess at least it wasn't too windy. Like, I didn't feel like there was too much wind chill going on. But it definitely was cold.
Well, what was going on where you had to miss the first act? What was the holdup there?
I got floor seats, and they put you in the smallest entrance to go in to get our armband so that we could get to and from the floor seats, because none of the merchandise stands were on the floor level. They did have two different drink stands and restrooms down there.
Okay.
But they did not have any merch stands, so you had to go upstairs, so you needed your pass to get back in. But they really should have had more check-in spots, because other people were getting in just fine. The people that were up on the main lobby were getting in just fine. And they could have used a couple of extra doors at the main entrance to let people in that got floor seats. They just would have needed extra people there to wristband you.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's what caused the holdup. Because I did get there a little bit late. The door, it was a little bit tough. Doors were open at 5, and the concert started at 6. And it didn't end until 11 p.m.
Holy moly.
So if you were actually there the whole time, it was 5 hours.
Well, if you got there when doors open, that could even be 6 hours, potentially.
Yeah. And I was not about to go in there and just eat arena food for dinner. That is not an option, in my opinion. It is not a good one in Nationwide Arena. I love their variety of beer choices, which even happened last night. There was a nice variety still open for the concert. But the food choices are bad to worse.
Yes, that's unfortunate.
Because even, I don't know how, but I feel like they screw up Skyline Chili. Like, there is not much to Skyline in some ways, just because it's hot dog, chili, cheese, maybe some mustard and onions if you like that stuff.
And it's already a franchise, so it's like they have it all over the place. You think one more location just happening to be inside of an arena would not be, you know, a big deal. A
challenging task. Yeah, but for some reason it is not quite up to standard, in my opinion.
That's too bad.
So, yeah, having to go and eat before and having it start so early was a little bit tough. And I missed Phil Anselmo, formerly of Pantera, with his new band, The Illegals. They just did Pantera material, evidently, was what I was told. I listened to their actual material in the build-up to going, because that's it. I just kind of listened to a lot of that music. And, yeah, not good.
Well, that's too bad.
Their original stuff, not really good. So, yeah, it's probably for the best that he was doing Pantera, even if I didn't hear it.
Yeah, that's too bad. That would have been kind of neat to see, I think.
Yeah, I was kind of looking forward to that, to be honest. I have not seen him perform in quite some time. I wanted to see if the Phil Magic was still around, or if things have gotten the better of him in the meantime. But hey, I don't know. And I'm not going to go to another location where they open for Slayer just to see them.
You're not going to follow this tour around the country?
No. No, once is probably good. If they're, I know they already went to Pittsburgh, so I don't think they're going back there again. So yeah, I don't think I'll see it again.
So what was the first act that you saw then?
Ministry. And I made kind of a bigger deal out of the fact that the not co-headliner, but the main opening act was Primus. And that was the first time I'd seen Primus live. But I don't feel like I'd seen Ministry live either.
I know I haven't seen either of those live.
I do feel like they're both of those bands kind of had like these weird periods of inactivity. Like they've been around a long ass time at this point, but there have been also like long stretches where they weren't making albums or weren't touring, or you know, because like I really feel like Primus has kind of had a limited number of tours, honestly, like more than Ministry. But it was pretty cool, like. They had a 45-minute set, and they really packed that thing in.
Hmm.
It was because, like, all of their popular songs are almost, for the most part, off of The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste and Psalm 69 is the easy shorthand for that other album, the K-E asterisk A-H asterisk something else, I forget.
Oh yeah, so would you say that you recognized a lot of the songs?
Yeah, because that was another one I listened to ever since I bought the tickets for the tour, which was quite a few months ago. I've listened to a lot of Ministry, a lot of Primus, and not that I don't kind of listen to Primus on a pretty regular basis anyway, but I listened even more frequently to kind of get a little more catalog depth in there. And then I listened to a whole lot of Slayer. Like, Slayer was one of those bands that I wasn't that excited about them. And then the first time I saw them live, I kind of liked them, but I still didn't really, like, go all in. But I think leading up to the concert, this was one of those times I'm like, man, I guess just because they've been around as long as they have been. Because, like, they started around the same time as Metallica. So, like, they started in the late 70s sometime. And the fact that they're still playing thrash metal 30-plus years into their career is... it's something.
Wait, if they started in the 70s, that would be, like... hold on.
Or 40 years?
Yeah, I think
that. Oh, yeah, they've been around like 40 years.
Yeah, that's a long ass time.
Yeah. I mean, they've
especially, as you say, thrash metal is not like a necessarily an old man's game for the most part.
No. No, it's kind of weird. Like, I heard it on Liquid Metal the other day. There's said something about celebrating 50 years of heavy metal, and I'm like, that's kind of crazy that it's just barely older than I am, the genre as a whole. But to have, you know, and I guess that's what's kind of hit me about Slayer. Like, I think the appreciation to have been around that long, and the fact that, because they're one of the big four, which Metallica is another one, Megadeth is the third one, and I feel like, Anthrax is the fourth.
Oh, the Mount Rushmore? For
Of thrash metal, yeah. Thrash metal specifically.
Okay.
Yeah, although I think a lot of that, a lot of them would apply to heavy metal in general, too.
Yeah.
But it was all because they were from the Bay Area, too.
Okay. So there's kind of, those guys kind of get grouped together.
Yeah, quite frequently. Because Dave Mustaine, the lead guitarist and singer of Megadeth, was at a point in Metallica.
Oh, that's right. I remember hearing that.
Yeah, he was in Kirk Hammett's spot as the lead guitarist. So, yeah. So, yeah, there's kind of...
Didn't their drummer die or something like that?
Their bassist died.
Oh, their bassist.
Okay. When their... tour bus flipped.
Oh. For some reason, maybe this was our former co-student, classmate.
Co-student.
I just invented a new terminology there.
Yeah, an unnecessary terminology.
Of course, you could also say classmate. Albert, I think he told me a story about a kid, or that the guy died from like trying to get off the bus, like while the bus was moving. Sometimes he would tell stories that were not true, so it's possible.
I believe that they were in an accident. If I'm not mistaken, they were in an accident and he died in said accident. So they lost. Cliff Burton is his name, and their music definitely did change after that. After he exited the band,
was that like the Ride the Lightning?
Was his last album?
That was his last album. Okay.
Yeah. So I believe "And Justice for All" was when they started with the new bass player.
That was a really big album.
Yeah.
I can remember that being in heavy rotation.
Yeah, that was in very heavy rotation. Because I think that was the one thing that, even when I first got into metal, like, that was the one thing that kept me from liking Slayer, was that there was no getting around the whole "they're satanic" conversation.
Oh.
That you always needed to have, and that since I was still firmly in the Catholic hold at that juncture of my life, you know, I think that maybe I had a little bit of an unnecessary stain on Slayer for that. Because leading up to this, I'm like, God damn, man, they have a lot of hits that I know, like. Because they played an hour and a half, and it was all songs that, again, admittedly, I'm maybe not the biggest fan, but I was familiar with every single one of the songs for an hour and a half.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good show, though.
Yeah, and there was some pretty crazy stuff going on during the concert. I kind of forgot that there's a giant clam bake going on when you're at any concert.
Oh.
And I may have, for the first time ever inside of a venue, been offered illicit drugs.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, that one was a little bit shocking. I know that pretty much every concert I've ever gone to, I have smelled illicit drugs. But I'm not sure that I have ever been asked to partake from another concert goer.
Well, that sounds like a friendly crowd there, you know, or at least a friendly neighbor there.
Yeah, well, there was a not-so-friendly neighbor.
Uh-oh.
I kind of witnessed an assault.
Hmm.
It was crazy. This woman came up beside me. And, like, everyone is facing the stage straight ahead, because, like, I was, like, dead middle in the crowd. And I'm headbanging away, and this woman is just staring past me. And then she kind of starts leaning into me.
It sounds as though, sorry to interrupt, but illicit drugs may have been a factor in this story.
It is quite a possibility. But I do feel like this was planned, because she just ran after some drunk dude and clocked him and knocked him out. Like, she knocked him out to the point that they needed to stretcher him out.
Just, like, one punches him?
I don't know exactly, because she pushed past me, pushed past the guy that was beside me, and we both kind of took a step forward, just not thinking a whole lot of it necessarily. Because sometimes you get some surly people through those crowds that, you know, may be on either the illicit drugs or the ones purchasable in the stand, such as the beer.
right? Or, you know, too much coffee. I don't know.
Or too much coffee. I can only speculate.
People can get a little testy sometimes. On edge, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit on edge. And so we both stepped forward, so I didn't actually see it, but I saw her, because someone stepped in front of my view, but I did see her swinging when my view got blocked at the drunk guy.
And now, you say the drunk guy, how could you tell that he was...
He was causing a ruckus. Okay, maybe he was not drunk, necessarily. He was definitely inebriated in some context.
Oh, okay. He was under some sort of influence.
He was definitely, because he was trying to start a mosh pit when there was no mosh pit. And he was staggering around. And he had been doing it for a couple of minutes. So I'd already kind of had my eye on him because I didn't feel like getting into any shenanigans like that. And I'll tell you what, most of the crowd, I will admit, was kind of around our age. Or a little bit older.
I was thinking that was probably the case.
So, yeah, no one was really looking for any of that horseplay.
I was wondering if there would be anybody there to actually be in a mosh pit. And this definitely went down in popularity, I would say, like, over my concert going career. Towards my later, maybe it's just the concerts I'm going to, I don't know. But I feel like even some of the concerts where there it's a little more high energy, like, you see people dancing, but you maybe not, like, smashing into each other and, like, trying to hurt each other.
Yeah, the amount of people moshing, I feel like even it... Well, A, I feel like most of the bands I go to see are generally the older metal bands.
Which, to be fair, would normally be the genre where you would expect to see the most moshing, probably. Like, you wouldn't necessarily expect to see that at, like, a... R&B concert.
No, I don't think people were moshing at Belle Biv DeVoe back in the day.
You know, country, western kind of music, probably not.
No.
You know, Britney Spears pop music, I would say not. It's usually your metal kind of music where you would expect that.
Yeah, well, I do think the getting older of some of the crowd, which is why I mentioned the older bands... I occasionally wonder, I have not seen that many younger bands. I know that Gojira is one of those bands that they're on my list of I like them now and have for quite some time. And, you know, it's more of the kids metal. But I don't know if there was that much moshing at that show. You know, there was definitely some... But it definitely didn't feel like what was going on when maybe I saw Pantera for the first time at the Jar in Akron. Like, I just, that's still like one of those things that it's complete blur in some ways. But almost the whole floor of the arena was a giant mosh pit. Wow. Like, it was bonkers. So, like, yeah, to go from that to, like, maybe a little circle of people right now is kind of what has happened. I always, like, I've started to listen to Jamie Josta, who is the lead singer for Hatebreed. And he always talks about coming out of mosh pit retirement. And I will admit, I have been in mosh pit retirement for... quite a while at this point. I would have to say that it's probably broaching a decade since I've decided to jump in a pit, at least.
I'd say that's pretty reasonable, Kevin. I mean, you know, NFL players would probably retire around that same age.
Tom Brady's still going at my age, damn it. I can still mosh pit.
Yeah. You know, I just have a hard time imagining Tom Brady in a mosh pit, though, for some reason.
Yeah, I don't see that like happening.
Dave Matthews Band kind of guy. Another act where you wouldn't expect to see a mosh pit.
Yes, that is quite true.
I mean, well, that sounds like a So you would say that that was a good show to check out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. Ministry was really good. Primus, it was awesome, awesome, awesome to finally see them live. It was a real pleasure to watch Les Claypool play bass. But, man, his guitarist is really something else, too. And I don't know if he's the guitarist that actually wrote those albums with him way back in the day, or if it's just the guy that's playing with them now. But, yeah, his guitar work is just really, it's weird that Primus gets grouped in with heavy metal. Like, that's the one thing, although it did kind of set up that counterbalance where some people were not Primus fans at all at the show.
Mm.
And I always feel like that kind of happens, that a lot of metal bands will maybe, like, have someone who isn't exactly like them co-headline with them to kind of, you know, chill things out. Like, the first time that Pantera concert, Typo Negative was the co-headline. And there were a lot of people at that venue that did not like Typo Negative at all. I would say that opposition was a little more vociferous than the Primus opposition last night.
Because it's like a slower kind of metal, I would say.
Yeah, it's called a gothic metal. And yeah, it definitely has a very slow pace to it. And yeah, like songs are like 7 minutes long pretty much on the regular. And you do kind of, it is always interesting to go to those things and to realize that people still kind of have those divisions. Like, I listen to so much of the different types of metal that I don't really get angry at it. If I don't like it, I just don't like it. And I move along.
That's, I guess, what I don't understand. Like, why are you getting angry about, you know, the performer who's out there to play for you? This wasn't a topic, but I don't know if you happen to see. Apparently, there was some kind of a rap, you know, hip-hop concert with a group of different acts. And one of the, I guess, Drake was asked to fill in for someone else for some reason. Okay. And was kind of closing out this concert. And for some reason, people were upset that they wanted to see, I guess, the act that had been originally going to be there. And were kind of like booing and like heckling him. And he was just like, you know, I want to be here, but, you know, if you guys want me to be here, it's like, do you guys want me to be here? And like,
everyone, there was
people saying
much.
No, and like, but then like, oh, not really getting like a huge reaction or anything, like the cheers either. And so he's like, all right, well, you know, I don't know, much love to y'all or something like that.
And he punched out?
He's walked off the stage. Yeah.
That's awesome. Like, because, like, it's one thing that he was kind of filling in. This is always one that, for both of those tours, like, it was a purposeful choice by the headliner that you're going to see to put them in that position. Like, Slayer didn't go, oh, whatever, you guys can play in whatever fucking order you want to. Just, like, have fun out there. It was like, no, like, Primus was the co-headline everywhere. And they got to do more time than it. They almost did a full hour themselves. So, I mean, yeah, like, the band Slayer kind of approved them. And Pantera approved the Typo. Like, it's kind of, that's the other thing that's always weird to me. It's just like, nah, dog, the band that you really like likes these guys. Like, why don't you like them?
And
so, at least in your example, he was filling in for someone kind of last minute-y. It wasn't like a, you know, planned in advance tour kind of situation.
Yeah. I still don't understand.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't understand it either. Like, I guess if you like that type of music, I would think that Drake kind of fits in with, you know, whomever he replaced.
Like, just go to the bathroom or something, you know, check out the merchandise booth. I don't know.
Oh, and was it some type of a festival situation?
Yeah.
Oh, like, those spots are like a half an hour usually? 45 minutes max?
Yeah,
I think... like you don't get as much time. Like, I mean, that's still one of those things that I haven't got into as a concert goer myself. Is those big multi-day festivals where you just pay one crazy price, but you get to see 3 days worth of concerts. I am strongly considering it this year, though, because Sonic Temple is going to have Metallica headline two different nights. And I'm just like, you know what? I've kind of had a grudge against Metallica since they went pop metal in some respects.
The thing that turned me against them was them deciding to sue the people who were downloading their stuff from Napster. I mean,
that did not help at all.
Because, you know, I was using Napster back in the day.
You know, I don't think I ever used Napster proper. I definitely downloaded songs.
There was like Kazaa.
I definitely used Kazaa. I think that was the main one that I had used.
Right. Very similar situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, that for me, I know people think that they sold out Metallica at some point. I think some people say even the Black Album was a sellout, which I happen to like myself.
Hey, yeah, that's always one that I've heard that a lot recently, too, that the Black Album was the demarcation. I'm like, no, man, that one was still good. Like, what the hell's your problem? Like, that's all I sit there and think. Like, I'm like, no, it was the one after that. Because I sold it to one of my class, Load, I believe, was the next album.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my classmates in architecture school liked it. And I resold it to them. Like, I had listened to it once, and I'm like, oh, what is this garbage? And I sold it. And nowadays, I would have to say that it's okay. Like, I don't go back and listen to that Metallica, though. Like, I'm up to Black Album, and then I'm out.
Yeah, I think Black Album was, like, a fun album, for, I guess, as much as it... some of the subject matter was not always fun, but it was still it was like maybe not quite as exciting as some of their earlier stuff was, you know, musically, but I still thought it was, you know.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't as heavy as some of their older stuff.
Yeah, not as intense maybe.
Yeah, it definitely turned the intensity down a little bit. But I still remember that Enter Sandman was so huge.
Yeah, that video was really big. I haven't seen that in a long time. That the strange older man kind of wandering around.
Oh, no, that is Unforgiven.
Oh, Unforgiven. Okay.
Yeah, but that was another huge hit, though.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I remember, I think I voted for that video for like Best of the Year or something on MTV. Because that was another funny one. This past weekend, the wife found MTV Classic. And more specifically, there was a block of I Love the 80s. And it was all videos from the 80s. And it was bonkers. Like, it did make me wonder. We heard the Neutron Dance by the Pointer Sisters. And that was, she was so excited because they had clips of Beverly Hills Cop video
yeah,
itself.
That's from the Beverly Hills Cop movie, yeah.
And it did make me wonder, because I was just like, oh man, I remember buying that soundtrack. And then I'm like, hold on, when did Ghostbusters come out? And I'm like, oh man, that came out in 84 too. I'm like, oh man, I know I bought that soundtrack. It's like, which soundtrack did I buy first? Because I definitely bought myself some soundtracks back in the day. I loved Axel F.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty classic stuff there.
Yeah.
So you think that was like your first album when you bought those?
The first tape I remember receiving, I believe as a birthday present, was Mr. Mister.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of which album that was.
Were you a big Mr. Mister fan?
Oh, yeah. I was pretty excited by this.
Interesting.
I'm
trying to even think of a song of theirs.
Oh, what? Really? They're abbreviating it?
MR period, MR period. Just so you can.
Oh, there we go. Oh, man. That,
was it some kind of disambiguation page?
Yeah, I had to go through the disambiguation page first. Oh, man. I just need to get to their... I'm pretty sure it was Welcome to the... Oh, no. Was it Welcome to the Real World? Yeah, I believe it was Welcome to the Real World.
What year was that album?
85. So that would have been after the soundtracks.
Okay. So that would have still been... I mean, obviously, you could have bought the soundtrack.
Yeah, because Broken Wings... And Kyrie
Hilleson.
Yeah, buddy. I was like, I know he's going to know these as soon as I say them.
Okay, yeah. Take these broken wings.
And let me fly again. Let me live so free.
Beautiful.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love the Mr. Mister. So, yeah, I might have had soundtracks before I had... an actual album.
Yeah.
It is conceivable. And I was thinking I was wondering if I bought those tapes through some type of drive at the school for reading.
Oh, like we would sell magazines and stuff
like
that?
Yeah. I feel like there might have been some tapes at some juncture in those sales.
You know, that seems so weird to me now to think about, like, this magazine company, like, turned a bunch of students into, like, their sales force. and, like, bribed us with these, like, cheap little prizes. I mean, am I wrong? That's like a... It's like a weird business plan, you know?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it's a little bit different than the Girl Scouts, you know what I mean?
But not that much different, really, I mean.
No, there's definitely a lot of similarities. The Girl Scouts, I would say, something a little more substantial out of it in the end. Than we ever did for selling all these magazines yearly.
Maybe the school got money. I don't know.
Because I don't know how our family always did really well, but that was just kind of weird though. That no one just ordered their own magazines. Like you had to go around and sell them for your school, which was just kind of a common thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are just people, it's just like, oh, no, dog, I get that at, you know. Yeah, they were just, yeah, why would you wait until then to subscribe? Like, that's so weird. Like, I didn't even think about that aspect of things. But like, it definitely happened. Like, there's no way that we kept on winning year after year, like, coming in the top five. Like, I always felt like, you know, there was some, I don't feel like we ever... Maybe one, but I always feel like we finished high for sales.
I remember you doing pretty well. I think you would clean up when it came time to get the prizes. I don't think I ever got scores in the very well with the sales on those. I remember some of the people whose like parents worked at places where there was a lot of people that worked there. It seemed like that was kind of a bit of an edge for people.
I don't think my dad might have taken it in, but I don't think he did. But we definitely had a lot of people in the neighborhood that didn't have kids for one reason or another.
Ah, well, that's a good situation to be in then, too.
Yeah. I do think that that helped us. but that is kind of a weird, vague memory. I just remember that was when I learned that how unfortunately one of my uncles had passed. Because I think Brian and I wanted to win the skateboard the one year, but it was forbidden. Because unfortunately, that's how my uncle met his demise, was on a skateboard.
Oh, no.
Going down a hill and contacting a, getting hit by a vehicle.
Well, yeah, I could see that would be a no-no at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it had happened, obviously, like, I mean, I did not know, you know, it had happened to him probably around our age when we were selling the magazines, honestly. I want to say early teens or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, logically, the chances of something happening to you are no greater because, you know, what happened to your uncle, unfortunately. But
Oh, right.
I can see where your, you know, your family would be anti that idea of you having a skateboard.
Yeah. So that honestly, like, for everything that we won, I remember the thing that I was not allowed to win. And I don't even know if we had a shot at, like, I don't even remember if we had a shot at actually getting that year or not.
The thing that I will forever remember coming out of the magazine sales is the year that we reached, like, the ultimate sales goal as a school, and our reward was to watch Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark as a school in the auditorium, and how upset Sister Paula was afterwards at how terrible a movie it was.
Why do I not remember this? Oh, man, that would be... But I completely 100% believe what you're saying.
You don't remember, like, their faces melting at the end? Yeah. And, like... Everybody, like, freaking out.
Did we watch that in the gym?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think it was the whole school. Because we would have been, like, in second grade. Like, that was probably not appropriate for, like, kindergartners to be watching. I don't know. Like,
they didn't
have PG-13 back then. It was just a straight PG, so it probably wouldn't have been a PG. Well, it definitely wouldn't have been.
Yeah, you just needed some parental. You needed a lot of parental guidance for that one.
The guy, like, getting splattered by the propeller blade. You remember that?
But they didn't really show that.
Oh yeah, but I mean. It's pretty obvious what happened.
There's, yeah.
Like, they show the propeller blade, and then there's, like, he's like, ah, and there's, like, a splatter of blood on the side of the plane. You kind of are able to connect the dots a little bit, I think.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, Indiana Jones straight up shoots the swordsman. Which, I mean, is still, like, one of those classic, all-time classic stories of how that ended up happening.
Oh, yeah, because he was sick that day.
Yeah.
He couldn't go through with this big choreographed fight scene. So he's just like, yeah, what if I just shoot him? So that actually turned out to be pretty funny.
Yeah. And I still occasionally like to think about the fact that it could have been Tom Selleck in that role, and thinking about Tom Selleck as Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I think that would have probably worked okay.
Yeah,
it would have been a little. It would have been different.
Oh, it definitely would have been different.
But I was always kind of partial to Tom Selleck myself. I've never seen some of his later work. Not really. You know, a Blue Bloods follower.
Oh my gosh, I definitely have to get roped into the Blue Bloods when I'm back at my parents' place.
Oh.
So I do see the Tom Selleck. I think that them and my in-laws both watch the Blue Bloods. So even if I don't watch, sometimes when those four are together, they get to talking about Blue Bloods.
Wow, that's, I knew it was a popular show, but like I don't know anybody who watches it, as far as I know.
Yeah, at least those four people that I know do.
But yeah, I think there's some, you know, obviously Magnum PI was a classic Tom Selleck role. But I also like Quigley Down Under. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Oh, God. No, I don't think I ever saw that one.
Yeah, he went to, I think it's based on like one book in a series of books about a character named Quigley.
that seems pretty reasonable to me.
He is a expert marksman, like sharpshooter kind of.
Okay.
Is able to, like, I don't know, slash sniper of the Old West.
Yeah.
Because part of his deal was being able to, like, aim from so far away that by the time, like, the bullet got there, like, the bullet actually reached you before the sound did. So, like, you would get shot, like, people would get shot, and then, like, you would hear the sound of the bullet, of the gun. So I thought that was a pretty badass sort of
yeah, I don't think that's how that works, but no matter how fast your bullet is going.
Well, I mean, what? It would have to be going faster than the speed of sound, right? And if it was over a long enough distance where that mattered.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, you'd really have to shoot from far away.
Right. I think that's what they were positing in this film.
Yeah. I don't think they had the accurate enough tools back then, but go on.
Take it up with Mr. Quigley, my good sir. But yeah, he went down to Australia and was working for a corrupt landowner down there and had to end up getting into some conflict with him, Kevin. I hate to say it.
Conflict is always bad, Ken.
It seems like every movie I see is conflict in there. I'm like, why can't I just see a movie where everybody gets along and, you know, nothing bad happens? You just never see any movie like that.
Everything should be sanitized, man. No more fighting. Congress, I implore you, no more fighting.
I think that's what Sister Paula wanted, at least.
Oh, man, yeah, I could just see her being generally offended by that movie.
She just, like, stared us down, like, when we got back to the classroom. She just, like, stood up in front of the classroom and just, like, I remember her, like, staring down the whole class. Just being like, you thought that was a good movie? Well, that was terrible. And just telling about how it was too violent and, you know, that is not what we're taught and all this stuff. So she was really not having it at all. I mean,
yeah, I mean, there were a lot of not-Catholic things going on there.
Sure.
There is definitely a little too much probably love interest for her liking in that one. There is definitely some swearing. Was there some limited swearing in that one?
Yeah, I would say so. There's a lot of drinking, too. Like,
oh,
her, you know, Marion having her drinking contest there at the beginning. I watched that with my daughter, and I was, like, a little uncomfortable. I'm like, this is not really great, example here. Like, they were getting drunk to the point where they were literally passing out at the table. Not necessarily what you want young children to be watching in a Catholic school environment, Kevin. I don't know.
yeah, although, I mean, we definitely got to watch plenty of drinking at this school / church festival.
Well, that is true as well.
But, yeah, probably not the best thing to have it that direct. You know, I feel like the fathers maybe hid the drinking a little bit better than having a straight up contest going on.
Yeah, she won that. She won the contest by like drinking the most and, you know, holding herself together, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, not really a great message out there to get out there. Like, that was weird. Like, the violence was weird. Like,
yeah.
It was a strange choice.
The fact that he's kind of basically stealing stuff all the time anyway.
It is a little bit up in the air, but I think he's putting it into a museum, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but he's still relocating it from one place to another.
And it did seem like he was getting paid some money, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it did always seem like there was some type of bank rolling involved.
Marcus, I believe, was the older guy who kind of was taking care of moving his artifacts that he finds.
He was kind of the broker.
The fence, if you will.
Yeah, the fence, whatever you want to call him.
No, I'm wondering, because, I mean, he made a very big point in that third movie about the Cross of Coronado belonging in a museum when he was having a fight on that. Remember those guys stole it and were going to sell it to the... on the black market or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, it belongs in a museum. And the other guy said, so do you. Well, that was quite a slam. But he did end up getting the cross, and I believe put it in a museum. But I don't think museums normally pay a lot of money for things. Like, people donate to museums, I feel like, is the more normal way that things get introduced. But maybe they do buy things. I don't know.
Well, that was supposed to have taken place during because that was still during World War II.
The Last Crusade. There was Nazis in that one too.
Yeah. There are definitely lots of Nazis involved, so there's a very kind of limited time period that Indiana Jones was doing a lot of running around the world.
This would have been during the part of the war where Hitler was focused on finding the, occult objects. That's where he spent a lot of resources during this time. Oh, I forgot to mention, one of the other objectionable things about the movie was that the overt religious themes, too, and basically the power of God, like, melting people's faces at the end of the, at the movie.
Yeah, you might be able to call that blasphemous.
Right.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons for Sister Paula to not like that movie.
I mean, it's really quite amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely according to what she believed, that is definitely highly offensive. But yeah, I definitely am not surprised that we enjoyed the movie, because it's Indiana Jones.
Oh, it's all, like, we could talk about. I mean,
seared into my brain.
It was a very iconic movie, Kevin.
Yeah, the whip, the hat, leather jacket, and I even got you that Harrison Ford mashup t-shirt that had BB-8 running after Han Solo, who had the statue that Indiana Jones had.
Yeah, except I think the statue also was C-3PO. It had been kind of altered into a C-3PO head.
Oh, okay.
So just... there's a lot going on in that. I do appreciate.
Yeah, there were some layers to that one.
Many layers interwoven. So I do appreciate that sort of extensive visual pun, or just any kind of puns, really. Or I'm on board.
Oh man!
And you know what, Kevin? I've been on board for this conversation tonight, even though I'm not sure we officially got to one topic. Well, we did cover the...
I had laid out Slayer as a topic earlier today, so we did get to one topic.
Yeah.
And we could say that we are recording on the evening before the Browns play the Steelers.
We could say that. That's true.
I mean, it may as well be said, just because we've been updating on the Steelers. Maybe we don't go on a 40-minute diatribe about them this week, but I do feel like, at least for posterity's sake, whoever might listen, can, especially Josh, who is a poor Browns fan, that I expect the Steelers to win tomorrow night. Their defense is just terrorizing people right now. It is as bad as they got beaten New England. I would love to see them play New England again. I think it is a whole different ball game. You know, it might end up happening, but their defense is just destroying offensive lines, and the Browns' offensive line is kind of terrible. So I think Bud Dupree, TJ Watt, I believe that them and Javon Hargrave and Cam Hayward are going to have their fun tomorrow evening. And, you know, I do think that I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but this past game, despite the lack of touchdowns, there were, in the proverbial words of Michael Tomlin, I think the arrow was pointing north with Mason Rudolph. The passes were getting aired out for a little more yardage. You know, I feel like he's starting to spread the ball around, which is maybe helping free up Juju a little bit more than he had been.
Mm-hmm.
They're still having some, unfortunately, some untimely drops.
Yes.
So there is definitely stuff to work on.
Either drop passes or fumbles at times.
It's still yeah.
popped up.
Yeah, as much as the defense is generating turnovers, the offense is giving up far too many. So there are some issues. But, yeah, I don't see that there isn't any reason why the Steelers shouldn't smack around the Browns. Well, maybe not smack around, just because their offense can't seem to punch it in for touchdowns. It'll probably be closer than I want it to be. But that defense, it's really a thing of beauty. I mean, I always love it more when the Steelers' defense is great. And the offense is just along for the ride. And right now, the offense is along for the ride. Like it's been at least like I feel like 10, maybe not 10 years, but ever since the Polamalu left, for sure. I feel like the defense has been on the not as, you know, kind of been the subpar part of the team.
I would say right now that they're definitely the best they've been in a long time. And I would say, I don't know, like, is it too far to say, like, the Greg Lloyd era of their defense? I'm trying to think of, like, some of the great defenses.
Oh, well, I would, you know what I was going to say is that, to me, the vintage defense was first Big Ben Super Bowl with Cowher. Because that was Roethlisberger's second year in the league, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Third at most. But I feel like it was his second.
No, I believe it was his second.
So, yeah, that year the defense was crazy good. Like, that one always stands out to me with Brett Kiesel and Casey Hampton. Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu. Like, Ryan Clark would just absolutely murder you if the ball did happen to come to the middle of the field. And Polamalu, you could find him anywhere. Ike Taylor was the one corner, and Deshae Townsend was the other, I think. I mean, Deshae Townsend might have been one of the worst parts of the defense, and he was still pretty serviceable, honestly. Like, I mean, I think he was maybe an above-average corner. Like, he wasn't elite, but he was probably better than most.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. Oh, because they had Kevin Green that Super Bowl, didn't they?
That might have been towards the end of his career there.
I'm trying to think of who the linebackers were for that team. Like, it's kind of weird that part is almost forgettable when there have been a lot of Steelers, linebackers that have made big plays. Oh, what's his name would have been there? I think Harrison would have been there at that point. He made the bigger plays in the Super Bowl with Tomlin as coach a couple of years later against the Arizona Cardinals. But I believe he would have been playing.
Oh, Joey Porter was a linebacker.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, then Harrison wouldn't have been there yet because he replaced that's who he replaced was
James Ferrier.
Wait. Oh, yeah, the tackling machine, James Ferrier. How dare I forget that?
Yeah, then you said Kiesel. Yep. So that was a pretty good defense then. So
yeah, that would be one of them that I remember in our lifetime. Definitely, Kevin Green must have been the first Super Bowl that Cowher went to.
Against when the Cowboys.
When they lost to the Cowboys. Because I'm trying to think, because I remember watching that one with Ron down in Canton since I was at school at Kent there. And I remember that defense being really good. So, yeah, I think that was the Greg Lloyd, Kevin Green defense, if I'm not mistaken. But that, because Neil O'Donnell was always one of those quarterbacks that was, he was just, good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wasn't great, but we've been over the interception thing, but, gameplay-wise, like, he was always put up consistent numbers and really didn't throw that many interceptions, which is kind of all you wanted out of a quarterback at that point. It's kind of almost crazy how much more important the quarterback position is now than it was then.
Yeah, I guess I feel like there's, like I may have touched on this too, there's a little bit of echo of Neil O'Donnell with today's Mason Rudolph to me. But,
Yeah.
He's good. Doesn't seem to be, I don't know. I don't want to be saying anything too unfair for him here, but
well, yeah, we'll see. Like I said, hopefully improves. We'll see what his ceiling is.
Yeah.
He's definitely not one of those guys that has come in and dominated right off the bat. I definitely think that it's pretty obvious that at this point Lamar Jackson has made quite a splash in Baltimore. They both got drafted. Well, I think that one's always kind of interesting because I believe it had been rumored that the Steelers were going to pick up Jackson if he was still available, but the Ravens picked ahead of them by just a spot or two, I believe. But I always did find that interesting that it was a possibility that the Steelers were going to pick him up if he did fall a few extra spots. But he's definitely made a bigger impact. But I also think that in general, everyone agree. I know that there are some people that didn't like his passing abilities necessarily, but if you didn't believe in his overall athleticism, I think you're a crazy person.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how a guy can throw for as many yards as he did in college and not believe in his arm.
He seems to be throwing pretty well too, so.
Yeah.
I don't think that's been a problem.
Yeah. So, and I'm never, I am definitely not going to ever expect that level of production out of Mason Rudolph. Like, even if he gets better, like, that is not his ceiling.
No.
Like, obviously he's never going to be the runner that Jackson is. But I'm not even, no. That kind of dynamism I'm just not expecting out of the QB position from him.
It's comical to even try to imagine him pulling off that 47-yard run highlight reel with that super spin move. That's just tough to see as a anti-fan of the Ravens. You know, it's tough to see a good play from a team that you're really not a fan of, Kevin.
Yep. Well, with those closing words on our on our favorite on that, football team.
On that sour note.
We are not completely sure how to say the name of this beer because it is from Belgium. But it's T-O space O with a hyphen through it diagonally.
Like a diagonal slash.
And then an L. I don't think it's Tool.
Tool?
Tool? Yeah, I mean, that I think sounds a little bit better. It is not the band.
No, not to be, we're not drinking the band Tool.
This is not Maynard James Keenan's wine that we are drinking.
Yes.
Although maybe we should do that for some show. Just get all fancy and drink wine from his winery in Arizona.
I would give it a go.
But your wife kindly picked up this sour beer from Tool for us, and it is pretty good. Like, I do like, the more I drink beers that aren't hoppy, I notice how much my palate gets dried out when I'm drinking hoppy beers.
Mm.
And sour beers are definitely not hoppy, and they're more of a thirst quencher, in my opinion. You know, I don't feel like I need a glass of water with this. If we were having, like, a double IPA, I'd probably be feeling parched at the end of the show.
Right. You kind of get like a most phlegmy-ness, at least, as your kind of environment inside your mouth dries up.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. This is more refreshing and I would say less punishingly sour than some of sours that I've had.
Yeah, it's pretty mild.
Yeah. So I could get behind this. And I think it's a little lower on the ABV side.
Yeah, we could pound this thing and not be drunk. I mean, this is hour of power material for me now. Like, I'd need to go with some type of session beer if I even tried to pull off an hour of power.
Well, I don't know. I think I've been retired from hour of powers for longer than I've been retired from the mosh pit.
Oh, man.
Yep, I'm not sure if I would be able to pull that off with this beer or any other, liquid even. I mean, that's just a lot to drink, I feel like.
it is a lot of liquid to put into yourself in 60 ounce. Yeah, it's 60 ounces, isn't it?
Yeah, in an hour. I mean, it adds up, though.
Yeah, because it's like 2.5 beers, or is it 3.5 beers?
60 ounces. 12. That'd be like 5 beers.
Oh, yeah. It's like 5.5.
So, that's a decent amount of beers.
Yeah, in an hour.
You're supposed to have 1 an hour, I believe.
That's the legal.
That's roughly 5 times as much as you're supposed to have.
Oh, boy.
Whew. All right. Wow. We're doing math.
On that note, kids, at DeFranco 11, at Gozer 33, the brand's at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.